What's up, you Alberta? My name is Elliot Tanti, and I am the host of What's Up, You Alberta, found here on 88.5 FM in Edmonton, CJSR, also via podcast on iTunes. Got a great show lined up for you today. Andrew Jeffrey, for those of you that don't know, he is the editor or former editor of the campus newspaper, The Gateway. His last issue as editor was the traditional joke issue. This year, they pulled no punches when they made fun of Cosmopolitan magazine, only they called it Cosbropolitan. So Andrew's going to be here. We're going to talk about Cosbro, where the idea came to be, some of the witty and edgy comedy that was involved in that issue, as well as talk about his time as the editor at The Gateway and of course, where he sees the Gateway moving forward in the coming years. Our second guest this afternoon, I'm very excited to have on the program. His name is Ian Armstrong. He's a second-year medical student here at the University of Alberta. He's also part of SGA, the Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Advocacy Initiative. They are hosting a conference this Saturday that is giving healthcare providers and practitioners an opportunity to learn about the subtleties of dealing with LGBTQ patients. So he's going to come in and talk a little bit about some of the guests that they're going to be hosting and well, the mandate of the conference. So very much looking forward to talking to him. One last thing before we get started here, guys, for any information on the podcast, as well as information on our guests, and who it is that they're representing, check us out at What's Up You Alberta. There's lots of good information there. You can link to our website as well as any number of our guests. Okay, enough with the plugs. Let's get started. Cosbropolitan isn't me just mispronouncing the name of North America's most notable pop magazine. No, Cosbro is the name of this year's joke issue, handed down by the university campus newspaper, The Gateway, including articles on the applications of Nutella as a makeup and the famed stud meter that starts with SU President Petros Kuzmu on the top and goes all the way down to former Advanced Education Minister Thomas Lukaszek on the bottom. This latest Gateway rendition is as likely to make you shiver as it will laugh. Here today to talk about Cosbropolitan and his time as the editor of the campus newspaper is Andrew Jeffrey. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us the history of the joke-ish episode or issue of the Gateway?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know how long they've been doing it for the Gateway, but basically as long as I've been here. When students have exams, there's not as much going on at the U of A. So like at the end of both terms, we put together like a joke issue just for something fun for students to be able to browse through, look at, laugh at, to kind of take their mind off studying and writing papers at the end of each term. So as long as I've been here, history's always been at the end of the first term, we make fun of ourselves in our annual getaway issue, okay, where we just take things we've covered and ads that we usually run and just parody those. And at the very end of the year, we pick another publication. Like my first year here was the National Pest instead of the National Post. We made fun of the Huffington Post last year. We've made fun of Sports Illustrated, the Edmonton Journal, and Metro, and this and that. And this year, we decided to parody Cosmo Magazine.
So why Cosmopolitan? Why pick on them and that media?
I think it was just as soon as I was actually a little bit worried a few months ago. A couple months ago when I realized this was coming up, and I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. Because I kept thinking it should be for some reason, I was thinking it had to be something to do in Edmonton or like a national newspaper, all of which is kind of done. Mm-hmm. And so I sent it out to the editors and asking like, hey, what are you guys thinking? You know, see if anyone else had any ideas. And someone tossed in Cosmo, and as soon as they said it, there was like, I think three other people immediately were like, yes, like, for sure, that has to be it. And like, I think one of those people was me. wealth of opportunity to like parody what they run. That's not to put down. Actually, I love reading Cosmo just because of how like ridiculous it can be.
Yeah.
Like if you don't take it that seriously, I think it's a really entertaining magazine. And there was so much we felt we could do with it when the idea was pitched that it was like just immediately people latched onto it.
Well, there's some really racy stuff in this joke issue. I mean, I think to myself opening up the first page was two overweight individuals who were not barely dressed at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're pushing some boundaries here. There's certainly a line that you may or may not have crossed. How do you figure out that line and justify what you're doing?
Well, I don't know. It depends on the situation. And it's a lot different when it comes to running a series article versus running something in our regular issue that might be pushing a line versus running something in a joke issue.
Right.
Because when it comes to a joke issue, it's like, is this, say, hateful in nature or libelous or some of those lines? Which, like, if libel in a joke issue, like probably not, because it's very clearly satirical. And is it funny or is it just offensive for the sake of being offensive? And that's kind of actually how, like, I think I wrote that on, like, a little sticky note that was in my office a whole year. Like, if you're going to be offensive, at least have a point. And that's kind of how, you know, I handled it. I would handle, like, that sort of question throughout the year when, say, something like Poster Slam, or where it's six people sitting in a room making fun of different campaign posters, or various joke opinion articles throughout the year where, you know, people are wondering, like, can we run this? Is this too much? Like, realizing someone's going to complain about it, is that a legitimate complaint that we would have to apologize for later? And so just the way I always, like, thought about that is, like, is there a point to running this?
Well, yeah.
Or is it just offensive for the sake of being offensive?
And so the way that the Gateway has been run this year, the jokes haven't just been in the joke issue.
That's how it always is.
And it's always been done that way. You're also mandated with showing off hard news as well. Are the joke articles or fake opinions getting in the way of that?
I don't think so. When I came into this position as editor-in-chief, I had this idea in my mind that I wanted the Gateway to be a lot more of a serious, I don't know about hard-hitting, but, like, something where the news section was featured a lot more prominently, and more importantly, the feature section was featured a lot more prominently in terms of, like, real hard features that were, like, interesting, deep subjects. And I think it took me about halfway through the year to realize, while that's something we should strive for, you need a balance. Because while we're mandated to keep the student body informed at the U of A, I also think it's the role of the Gateway to entertain, like, students and give them what they want to read. And to be perfectly honest, there are as many people picking up the Gateway to look at the comics, to, like, be entertained by joke articles, as there are people picking it up for the hard news. So I think what you need is balance, and I don't think one takes away from the other. I think poor opinion pieces take away from news stories. I don't think joke ones do, because I think people are smart enough to – I think university students are smart enough to be able to separate the two. It's more – I would be more worried about a very self-serious opinion section that was – poorly written or had, like, not very well thought out opinions, bringing down the publication and then by extension, like, these hard news stories, more so than, like, genuinely funny, entertaining joke pieces.
Many of your friends and colleagues will note that you have a comic side to yourself, a sometimes dry, sarcastic sense of humor. How much of you is coming out in the Gateway this year?
I don't think a whole lot in terms of, like, I think because it's not like I'm going to edit something to make it sound more like what I would say or what I would write, you know. I think it comes out a little bit in terms of when I help come up with ideas for content, when I pitch ideas. But even past that, like, the individual section editors have much more autonomy and control over their sections than I do. I think the tone of the Gateway has a lot more to do with the people directly contributing to it rather than, you know, the people at the very top.
The Gateway has expanded into some new projects this year, including a magazine issue. Is this necessary in order to remain current on campus?
We didn't see it so much as a way to, like, remain current or, like, relevant on campus, so much as we thought it was a good idea. I thought it was a really good idea, and I know there are lots of people who agree with me because the magazine idea has been one that's been kicked around for years before I was on staff at the Gateway. It was something that we decided we wanted to go ahead with because we thought it'd be a cool project for us in terms of it be able to teach a different kind of journalism, a different kind of writing to the people who volunteer at the Gateway, and hopefully the content would be good enough that and engaging enough that it would really resonate with people on campus. The fact that it's more timeless in a sense. It's not, It's not just, say, you pick up an issue of the Gateway 2 weeks later and half the content isn't relevant anymore because, you know, these arts events have passed, these news stories are old, et cetera. It's something that can kind of last for a while. You know, there's still a ton of newsstands right now, and if you picked up one of those magazines right now, you'd still be able to read everything in it and get just as much out of it as you would have the day it came out. So we thought it'd be interesting to, like, the student body in that way, and that it would be a good learning experience for our own volunteers, because that, in my mind, is the biggest goal of the Gateway, the fact there's no journalism program at the U of A to teach students here how to become journalists themselves who want to pursue it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. And so this is basically the only way that a student at the University of Alberta has an opportunity to learn about journalism or be a part of a journalism program.
Pretty much. Like, there's no journalism program here. You could learn about a different kind of journalism at CJSR in terms of, like, broadcast. But, like, if you want to get into print journalism, like, this is if you want to get into print journalism and a U of A student, if you don't volunteer at the Gateway, I'm not really sure what you're doing. You're not really preparing yourself.
For sure. For sure. There has been an increase in multimedia to the Gateway as well, not just over your watch, but over a period of time. This includes a YouTube channel, obviously an ever-expanding website, as well as podcasts. Is this an indication of a changing media landscape in your mind?
Oh, for sure. I think this goes back to that question you asked earlier. Like, this is, like, that's something to make, try and make us more relevant, mm-hmm. and try to make us current and keep. And, like, imagine if you saw your student's paper didn't have a good website, you know, and didn't have a YouTube channel or, like, a social media presence. You know, it would look a lot worse. These are things that we need to do to remain relevant to students. More and more students are going to be accessing news through Twitter posts, through Facebook posts, and, you know, just coming to our website rather than pick up a newspaper as time goes on. So we need to do these things because that is like the changing media landscape. That's the way media news is changing everywhere.
So you're integrating multimedia into the print media that you're doing, and mm-hmm. there's a functionality to that. How long do you think before news media goes completely digital?
That's interesting because I know there's some people I've talked to at the Gateway who will pitch the idea that, like, maybe in 5-10 years there won't be a print copy of the Gateway anymore. It'll be completely online. And I'm not sure if I buy that.
Why not?
I don't know. And maybe it's just me not being able to wrap my mind around the fact that, like, there wouldn't be a physical copy of the Gateway in only 5 years. 10 years down the road, maybe. You know, 10 years ago, we didn't have any of these multimedia components that we do now. So it's come together, if you look at it that way, it's come together fairly quickly. So maybe give another 10 years and, like, we'll be completely out in that sense. But just, we still get so many readers through our print coverage the fact we just expanded print another way with, like, this magazine issue, it's really hard for me to wrap my mind around that in 10 years, all of that would be gone and it'd be only online. But it's possible. Like, there's really no way to know for certain.
Is there a difference between campus news in that way than in maybe more mainstream news coverage? Every indication seems to be that print media is moving away from print.
Yeah.
Is there something different about the fact that the Gateway's on campus? It's a campus newspaper.
I think maybe
that it's free.
I think in one sense, yeah, it's free. The fact that it's free could be. Like, the fact that you can just pick it up and not have to worry about paying anything to do it, which actually a lot of people don't realize, because we see people, like, pick up a Gateway and then put it back down because they think they have to pay for it. Or when we put out our reader surveys, people will be like, oh, like, I didn't realize. Like, they don't realize that the Gateway's free, which is funny. But I think it's another thing is just accessibility. You're walking students who spend a day at the U of A, like, walking around campus, going to their classes, no matter where they're going, they're probably going to be in a building where there's a Gateway rack somewhere. So they're directly walking by, like, these stacks of newspapers that are completely free and completely accessible. So it's incredibly accessible for anyone to pick it up, as long as it's, like, an interesting front cover, as long as it's, like, an interesting story, something that people want to read. So in that sense, it's, like, it's much more accessible than, like, your average other print publications, except for maybe Metro. But, like, say something like the Journal or the Globe and Mail, where you have to, like, go to a convenience store, or you might find like a newspaper box, you have to pay to pick one up, stuff like that.
So you mentioned the Metro briefly there. I wanted to touch on that a little bit. That's another free newspaper that's being handed out on campus. Has the presence of Metro hurt the Gateway?
I think our pickup is lowered a little bit for sure because of Metro, maybe even a fair bit. I don't know the exact numbers because like I don't know the exact numbers because I wasn't here like before there was Metro like say being handed out in the LRT station. But yeah, because there are a lot of students who will walk through the LRT station, get one Metro, and they won't think to pick up a Gateway or any other publication because they already had one newspaper today and like they don't think to get another one. But in my mind, it shouldn't be that hurts the Gateway at all. And anytime you have some form of competition, that should only only encourage you to do better and to figure out ways that figure out ways to get what you're working on out there more prominent and more meaningful and important. If there's a competitor to the Gateway on campus in any sense, that shouldn't be seen as a negative to people who write for the Gateway. That should be seen as like a something to motivate them and drive them, us, whatever, to make a better newspaper, to make it something that people will feel they have to pick up and read, to find stories that only they are reporting on or that they are the best ones reporting on. You know, the whole thing, like if you can't be first or the only ones reporting on something that you're at least reporting on at the best. So people feel like they need to see your coverage.
Great. So you're moving out of the position of editor this year. Obviously, there's a lot of stress each week with the printing of the Gateway. But at the same time, are you going to miss it?
Oh, for sure. I don't know. I feel like I've, just with, this year coming to an end, I've talked to so many people over the past few weeks, even like on another CJSR show, like the Gateway Presents, cheap plug, I've talked to so many other people about leaving the Gateway, about coming to the Gateway, about how I feel about it. I feel a little bit like Grandpa Simpson, just droning on about the same thing. But yeah, like these past 4 years at the U of A have been, in a sense, completely defined by like my volunteering at the Gateway. I know when I leave the U of A, I'll remember my time at the Gateway much more than I will remember classes I went to. And a lot of the people that I met at the U of A who I'm going to miss and like cherish memories with come from like meeting them at this newspaper. Like something that I tell people all the time is when I first came to the U of A, like I went to a Gateway meeting before I went to a class, an actual university class. So this is something that has very much defined my time here, and to be leaving is, it's less stressful. Yeah, I won't have to worry about being here at midnight on Tuesday nights anymore. And you know, waking up in a panic Wednesday morning because I just have like this weird feeling in the back of my mind that something's wrong with the newspaper. but I'm gonna miss working on this, working with the people that I had the pleasure of meeting there. Like that feeling you get when you pick up a newspaper Wednesday morning or afternoon or whatever, you get to see like the hard work you did pay off and with a really great issue.
Great. Thanks so much for being here, Andrew.
No problem.
For those of you that don't know, you can pick up Cosbropolitan anywhere on campus, and I think there's aspects of it online as well.
Yeah, you can check it out online as well on gtwi.ca.
Perfect. Thanks. Okay. All right. In recent years, healthcare providers and advocates for the rights of members of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, and queer community have released some alarming facts regarding the health and wellness of the community. A recent United Kingdom study published in 2008 found that members of the LGBTQ population were 2 to 3 times more likely to suffer from mental health concerns like depression, anxiety, suicide. Furthermore, there is more and more interest from researchers and practitioners on best practices when dealing with members of the LGBTQ community. Our guest today, Ian Armstrong, is a med student here at the University of Alberta and is a member of the SGA, or the Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Advocacy Initiative. They are hosting a conference this Saturday with the mandate of better equipping healthcare workers to approach LGBTQ health concerns. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
This conference is called the Inclusive Health Conference, and it is a really interesting initiative brought together by your group. Is there some concern that typical healthcare practices are not inclusive to the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, that's an interesting question to look at. When you think about the care that's provided to LGBTQ people, it's sort of easy to identify overt discrimination. And there are certainly some alarming stories of especially trans people, but also lesbian, gay, and bisexual people being harassed or being denied care. I think there was a statistic in the States that found that 11% of transgender people had been denied medical care. And so that's sort of one extreme. But you also are going to see just little things like a doctor asking, do you have a boyfriend to a girl, instead of asking, do you have a partner? Or things like if a transgender person asks to be referred to by male pronouns instead of female pronouns, and if the, say, the secretary or the doctor keeps making that mistake, then that can be really off-putting for people. Or if a doctor sort of frowns when someone is mentioning that they have a same-sex partner. So there are a lot of things with inclusive language and just sort of attitudes that I think are a lot harder to change, even if we're not seeing as much sort of overt discrimination.
I see. Is this an issue that's systemic throughout the medical community, or are we seeing hotbeds in parts of Canada and the United States?
That's maybe a difficult question to answer, in part because a lot of the time, I think LGBTQ people move to larger cities, and so it's going to be a lot harder to find an LGBTQ positive physician in a rural area, and so there might be a lot of that would be sort of difficult to measure. I think that when there isn't a lot of research on this topic, especially from Canada, but there are some statistics. One in particular that I found really interesting from a Statistics Canada analysis that found that lesbian and bisexual women were less likely to have accessed pap tests or mammograms. And I think that that's something that really comes down to the doctor-patient relationship. The sort of one part of that would be the mistaken belief that lesbians aren't at risk for cervical cancer, and so they wouldn't be getting that treatment, when in fact women who are in relationships with other women might have been exposed to HPV. And the same goes for transgender men who haven't had their uterus removed. But I think that another big part of it would be that sort of overall across Canada, there might be less comfort from lesbian and bisexual women with their doctor. And so if they feel like they're not respected by their physician, or if they feel like they're not really safe in that relationship, then they might be less willing to sort of access those preventative health programs.
And this could be put these women at considerable risk, given that these are procedures that need to happen regularly, correct?
Yeah, they're things that are meant to catch cancer early before it gets to a really late stage.
In what ways are treating members of the LGBTQ community different from treating patients from other demographics?
I think that that there are a lot of similarities with other types of minorities, especially a common concern is using inclusive language,
right,
and not saying something offensive by accident. And so that would sort of also potentially be an issue with treating patients with disabilities or patients from a racial or cultural background that the healthcare provider isn't familiar with. So certainly there would be some similarities there. I think that although there is a lot of societal change going on right now, that sort of the aspect of religious judgment and some of the fallout from that, like discrimination at jobs and social isolation, that's probably fairly unique, since most of the time LGBTQ individuals grew up in families where there was no one else, or where at least their parents most likely weren't lesbian, gay, bisexual,
right,
or transgender. And so that can be really isolating. And I think that probably contributes to some of the statistics about depression and anxiety and some of the shockingly high suicide and suicide attempt rates.
For sure. You note that there is considerable variability in how much teaching time in Canadian med schools devote to LGBTQ-related topics, and that the goal of this conference is to further that training on the subject. What are some of the speakers going to be talking about Saturday with regards to these issues?
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff is fairly specialized, and since it's dealing with a population that's not that common, it doesn't necessarily get, it's not seen as high priority as things like heart attacks or strokes. And so some of the stuff that we're going to have speakers talking about are things like family planning using donor gametes, so sort of reproductive endocrinology type things.
Okay.
And then some recent advances and recent or new approaches in HIV prevention, like pre-exposure prophylaxis. There'll be some speakers on counseling LGBT youth. We have a psychologist and a psychiatrist who will be coming in to talk about that, as well as a psychiatrist to talk about transgenderism, since that's often something that's not really well understood. How much do we know about the biology behind it, and what are sort of some of the options that people can access for treatment?
So I'm noticing that there are quite a few of these topics have a medical stripe to them as well, but lots of them would be, I think, of interest to members of the LGBTQ community, especially you're talking about recent developments in HIV care, reproductive endocrinology. Is this conference open to everyone?
Absolutely. The conference was initially designed with healthcare students and practitioners in mind, although it is open to the general public. And we've actually gotten a lot of interest from members of the general public, which we weren't really expecting. So one thing that I'm really looking forward to is some dialogues emerging between members of the LGBT communities in Edmonton and some of their healthcare providers. And I'm hoping that can sort of create some dialogue about what issues are being seen from the other side and what we can work on, as well as people sort of taking initiative to learn about issues that are pertinent to their own health.
I see. You mentioned dialogue there. Is that what's missing in the healthcare of LGBTQ individuals right now, do you think?
I think that it is often really difficult to have productive dialogue there, especially since relationships between doctors and patients, or patients and other members of the healthcare team, are often fraught with a power dynamic that makes it really difficult for patients to, sometimes difficult for patients to advocate for themselves, and also difficult for there to be time set aside for productive dialogue there. And also it's an area of a person's life that's very private. And so it's rare that people would, that people with certain medical conditions would come together and advocate for themselves as a group. So since it's often something that's dealt with on an individual basis and within the context of a power relationship, I think that does make it difficult to have the sorts of dialogues that will hopefully be emerging here.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. Where can people get more information on the conference?
So we have a website that's inclusivehealthconference.wordpress.com. That's all one word. And that has both the schedule and some of the registration information. So you can either buy a ticket online or just reserve a placeholder online through that website.
Great. And all that information will be in our show notes. Thanks so much for being here, Ian.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Ian Armstrong. He's a med student here at the University of Alberta and has been helping organize the Inclusive Health Conference. Wow, what a great show this week. Can't say enough about my two guests. Really, thank you so much to Andrew Jeffrey for coming on, talking about Cosbropolitan, his time as editor of The Gateway, and to Ian Armstrong for giving us some really relevant and interesting information and pointing us towards what is, I think, a really interesting conference that'll be going on this weekend. If you guys want any more information on the Inclusive Healthcare Conference, as well as want the link to check out Cosbropolitan, check us out on Twitter at What's Up U Alberta. This has been What's Up U Alberta on 88.5 FM here at CJSR. And, I'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks.